Yes, we are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It's called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. John Wall doesn't need no introduction. It's an insider's look at the NBA and culture surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick of the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, brand new episode of the I Am Rappaport Stereo podcast is coming up. Wishing everybody a happy, healthy, and safe, very, very safe Thanksgiving Day weekend. We got a special, wacky, way out there episode of the I Am Rappaport Stereo podcast with Dr. Drew. Dr. fucking Drew. You know, Dr. Drew from The Love Line Show with Jimmy Kimmel and Adam Carolla. Dr. Drew from Family Therapy, Celebrity Rehab. I love fucking Dr. Drew. So he came right to the Gloom Tomb. We talked about all my bronchial issues, my social anxieties, all sorts of questions and answers. I told him I had problems. I told him I have issues. And Dr. Drew tried to figure it out the best he can. Talked about his career. Talked about if he's actually a doctor. Like, are you a doctor or are you just like a Screen Actors Guild, actor dude? Got to all that. And then on this episode, we also have Beyond the Shame Game, After the Shame Game with me and Dean Collins. If you haven't ever seen the Shame Game on my Instagram, my Facebook, my Snapchat, or my Twitter, Miles, please play an episode of The Shame Game.
Welcome to the first ever edition of The Shame Game. This is where we take people's messages of men with private accounts who have slid up into my DMs, and we're going to shame you motherfuckers.
Yes.
It's The Shame Game! What time is it?
Shame time.
What time is it?
Shame time.
Any fuckboys in the house?
Who?
Any groupies in the house? Shame time. Dean, what do we got today?
Okay, so the first one is from Huey J3. He's got a wife and kids in the phone.
Oh, yeah. He said, you're a piece of shit, lowlife, N-word lover. Stop acting like an N-word. You're just a lowlife piece of shit scumbag, and if I see you on the street, I'll punch the piss out of you. Huey, you ain't doing jack shit, ho. All right, Dean, what else you got?
Okay, so the next one is from Nick Levitt _, who says, you're a disgrace to the Jewish people. Ooh. But hey, sucking N-word cocks makes you money, right?
Oh, yeah, more money.
Fucking wigger clown.
Ooh, wow. Nick Levitt, with your private account and your discount tattoos, we're gonna shame you!
Okay, so the Shame Game was created by me and my young shooter, Dean Collins, friend and recurring guest of the I Am Rappaport Stereo podcast. He's a family member. My shooter, Dean Collins, is a family member. So it was derived, it was created because I get all kind of vicious, wild, off-the-wall, wacky shit, okay, from people in my DMs. People feel free to talk. People feel so comfortable to talk greasy in the DMs, sometimes right in public, making threats, saying things about Jews, saying that I'm an N-word lover, all sorts of crazy shit. Like, if you want to talk shit about me, that's fine. That's fine. You want to say, I saw you on the Celebrity All-Star Game. You look like you run like you have a pile of shit in your pants. I have no problem with that. They say, oh, Mike, look at your nose. Why is it so big? I have no problem with that. Oh, your movies suck. Fine. Any of that stuff. But when you get into burning Jews and you take it across the line, we're going to shame you. Okay, you want that fame, but you're going to get that shame. Okay, so just like Watch What Happens Live, NBA with TNT, the After Game, the Talking Dead, we created After the Shame Game. Okay, because on this particular episode of the Shame Game with me and Dean Collins, things got wacky. High school principals were involved, teachers were involved, other students were involved, parents got involved. Okay, so we made a post game. It's After the Shame Game. The Iron Rapport Stereo Podcast coming right up with me and motherfucking Dr. Drew, and then After the Shame Game Live with me and the young shooter, Dean Collins. The Iron Rapport Stereo Podcast is proudly sponsored by Casper Mattress. Casper is that outrageously comfortable mattress you've probably heard about a million times on podcasts, but it lives up to all the hype and expectations. Real customers have said things like, my Casper mattress is quote-unquote sleeping on a brioche, like the tingling baby laughter in the moonlight. If you had to compare sleeping on the Casper mattress to anything, what would you say? What would it be? How about a cloud? My first morning waking up on a Casper mattress, I was so energized and ready to take on the day. It's been 3+ years. You can lay on it, sleep on it, skeet on it, do whatever you want. Casper Mattress is the number one mattress in the world. Says me. Says me. I've been sleeping on one for 3+ years. You can buy a Casper mattress easily online. It's delivered to your door in a compact box. Free shipping, free returns. You could sleep on the mattress for 100 nights. If you do not like it after 100 nights, they will pick it up and return everything for free. The Iron Rapport Stereo Podcast listeners have a special offer. Get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/Rappaport. That is Casper.com/Rappaport. Terms and conditions apply. They have sheets. They have pillows. It's holiday time coming up. You do the math. Go to Casper.com/Rappaport. All right, I'm in here with the jet-lagged,
yes,
time zone.
I am. Time zone challenged.
Time zone challenged, Dr. Drew.
Thank you,
Dr.
sir.
Dr. Drew Pinsky.
Michael called, said, do you a pod? I go, let's do it right now. Let's go.
I'm ready to go, man. and you're in my home. The first thing I was asking, because you said about your phone.
Yeah, I know. It's pathetic.
Is there actual, because I seriously, I think I'm phone addicted.
Well, I think we all are. I think, we're phone addicted in the way that, it's sort of a weird thing. It's what has happened to humanity. It's like saying we're car addicted. We should be riding a horse.
I don't.
You know what I'm saying?
I have
or
to
we should
say
be walking. I'm sure there's a time when people went, yeah, you should be riding a bike or walking. You're car addicted. You're dependent on that thing.
I mean, is there a diagnosis? Like if there?
Yeah.
Because car addicted is like you need a car. Like you don't need.
No, I need that thing. I need
you,
it.
But you don't need it.
I'm dependent on it. I don't know.
That's
addicted
your
addiction.
I'm no.
Addiction means it keeps getting worse and you want to stop, but you can't.
I don't know if I'm not phone addicted. There's and I don't have an addictive personality, but it's called, like, because the phone you need.
You ever been addicted to anything? For reals?
Knock on wood. I'm not, I don't have addictive personality.
You just said you have addictive personality.
No.
You said I have an addictive personality.
I said I don't have an addictive personality, but I'm addicted to the phone.
Oh,
and I sincerely think that I'm addicted to my phone. Like, I don't know if I can't stop. But I've gotten to the point where I've asked myself, like, what would I give up? Like, Twitter, social media, like, what is your drug of choice on your phone besides texting and just having it in your hand?
It's really sort of email, staying connected. I don't like social media. If social media went away, I'd be very happy. I sort of feel like I'm kind of obliged to check it. I don't check it compulsively, but emails, text, phone, I'm checking. And some of it's because I have so much, I live in different worlds. You know, my office texts me things and emails me things, and I have to check labs and I have to be following up on patients. And so it's kind of a weird thing for me. If I'm without my phone, I feel like, oh, something might go down without me knowing it, and that wouldn't be good. And It's that kind
of
thing.
No, I know. Yeah. It's I'm not happy with it. I'm not proud of it, and I think it's an issue. And I you know, luckily, like, I wasn't born and bred with a phone in my mouth. But there's kids now that they know nothing other than phone, you know, instant YouTube, whatever it is. Like, you know, I did it when my kids were you know, small, like the iPad was the thing.
How do your kids now?
17 and 15.
How they doing?
They're good.
Yeah. So, all right. So,
they're fine, but they also didn't have it their entire life. But, like, you know, like.
There's going to be, think about this. Here's what we really don't know. What children need to develop a healthy sense of self and an emotional landscape is face-to-face, connected sort of proximity with adults, particularly caretakers.
Right.
They need it, and they need a lot of it. They need, like, face-to-face, focused and proximity where they are playing and they're trying things and they're going out and then coming back to the parent. If we, what we do is we are around them and then we put them on a machine that captures their attention. Just because it neutralizes them and makes them easier for us, we don't know what that's going to mean. We also don't know what it's going to mean when they see a lot of pornography when they're 11.
That's true.
Average age of exposure is 10.
I totally agree with that. Yeah. I mean, that's not surprising at all.
Yeah, we don't know what that's going to do. If we were studying bonobo chimps and said, well, we're going to take these little chimps and expose them to crazy material and they behaved a little differently, would that surprise us? No.
So, I think it's going to be an issue. I think... It desensitizes these fight videos and like it's a weird thing. Like, I'm like, okay, my little addiction to my social media, my texting and just the companionship of the phone, fine. I'm already ruined. I'm already broken goods. but a little kid, you know, they should have a shot at life. You know what I mean?
In other words, for you, it's
I'm
actually therapeutic.
I'm
it's actually,
done.
It's actually neutralizing you in a positive way.
Yeah, well, that's how I try
you,
to
you just be a nuisance out in the world
yeah,
otherwise.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what my wife, because she's always like, you know, you're on your phone too much. I'm like, listen, it's either I'm harping you
or look what I could get into if I didn't have this phone.
Yeah.
Who knows where.
You want me to break your balls or you'd rather me just like tweet at the world?
And by the way, people have argued that that's an advantage to pornography being so available, that men maybe aren't as prone to cheat. I don't know if that's been proven, because also it might ramp guys up to the point where they, you know, go out in the world. So we don't know.
I don't know. But I definitely think the phone, the social media of it, you know, sort of getting validation from your phone. I have it. Like, I have it. And I'm a grown up, but, like, you know, kids like having this false sense of, like, you know, success. Like, what the hell are you gonna do? Like, now you're 23, you have 23 million followers and you have no money.
Or what have you really accomplished? I mean, what have you created and done? Nothing, right?
Right.
You just created some likes or something. But there's so many different layers to this. There's another part of it, too, that you may not be aware of, that you should be with teenagers, is that they are sexting. That's just a routine behavior. Okay, well, in California...
Tell them. I've said it before. Tell it to them.
In many states, that is a felony.
Tell them.
That is trafficking in child pornography. Every time somebody asks for it, sends it, receives it, or shares it. Each one of those a separate charge.
Say it again.
Felony in the state of California.
So if you ask for it...
Felony.
So if...
Procuring child pornography.
If me and you were 13 and you say, hey, Mike, let me see your loaf.
Yeah.
You just doing that.
Procuring child pornography. And if I send it, it's a felony. If I receive it, felony.
Yo.
If I then I go, hey, Joey, look at this, another felony.
Have you dealt with people, like, are people getting in real trouble because of this?
I do a lecture with a former DA that used to prosecute that. And she said she would go at it hard. She'd just go at it. Because DAs are worried about how many positive, you know, outcomes they get.
That's crazy.
Yes.
That's crazy.
I work with this woman. It's digitalcitizenacademy.org if you want to learn about that.
That's fucking scary.
Yeah, I know. I know. And what she and I have gone into high schools and talked about it, and they went, this is a conspiracy. You're hiding it from us. She goes, no, you just don't know that this. And the other thing, there are some hackers apparently in like Chechnya or Georgia or something that are constantly scanning every text in America for any body configurations that look youthful. And if they see it, they pull it. And then they sell it. And that becomes permanent internet. You know, you could be out on the internet somewhere. You're going to do a stand-up somewhere and they Google you before. Oh, there's Mike when he was 15. Great.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
So that's crazy. Yeah. But I've talked about that before, and like People don't believe it. They don't believe it.
Mm-mm.
But if you're over 21, you can ask for loaf pics and anything you want.
You do it to my mind.
All right. So Dr. Drew.
Loaf pics.
I
got hurt today by Howard and his team.
Yes. Now what happened?
I was my mother just died.
Sorry.
And she was lived a great long life, but and I was cleaning up the basement and I found a stack of Mad magazines from like 1968.
That you collected.
Yeah, from 4 years, 68 to 72. And I thought, wow, I've always heard Howard talk about how he was just so meaningful to him, the Mad magazine.
Right.
I thought this could have meaning to him. So I packaged it up, wrapped it up, I wrote a nice letter. And I forgot to bring it. I was on the wrap-up show Monday and last week, and I forgot to bring it. So I went, oh, God darn it. So I went back the next day, and I waited in the lobby, and I found John Hine, and I gave it to him. And I had a lot to do that week. I was really busy, but I thought, I really want him to have this. And I was felt good about it. I'd wrapped it, you know. He busted my balls for 20 minutes about this disgusting, rat-eaten, spiderweb-filled, ugly, awful, broken down Mad magazines, and he was over Mad magazine anyway. I was crushed.
And did the vultures, savages jump in?
Only Robin.
Only Robin.
That's
jumped
all I heard.
In.
I really almost couldn't listen to it. I was so hurt.
Did you hear any of it at all?
Yeah, I heard a little bit. I heard Robin jumping in.
She was jumping in. Why would you want this?
Like, why is he sending that to you? And of course, why you'd only send, you know, sort of. Why wouldn't you? You'd go out and you'd get a magazine that's, you know, pristine and send that to Howard Stern. You wouldn't send these disgusting ratty things that were from my mother's basement.
They're from your mother's basement.
She just died.
And she just died. This was incompassionate.
Yes.
And the gorilla or Jason Kaplan?
The gorilla, I immediately sent him an email.
And what did that gorilla say?
Gorilla said, "Welcome to my world, LOL."
Welcome to his world. You know, No, you should say. You should have attacked him back.
He was helpful to me.
No, fuck that. That's double crossing. You never know how that's going to manifest itself or what his intentions were. But you know what? That's the nature of the show. Like, how do you deal with
ball busting like that?
Being a real therapist. Because you're
I'm
real
a physician.
Therapist.
No, I'm a physician.
What does that mean?
I'm a doctor.
What does that mean? I have so many fucking ailments.
People get mixed up about what I am. Here's what you guys wrote me.
Okay. Welcome to our world. No good DAs. Fuck. Don't worry. When the next time you're on a wrap-up show, you tip me off. I'll call in there. I got your back.
All right. Fair enough.
You're a physician.
I'm an internist.
Internist.
People get confused about what I do. I did internal medicine. I taught internal medicine.
Which means what?
General, everything
non-surgical. I got a cold. I come in there.
You have a heart attack. You have a stroke. I did a lot of intensive care medicine. I was going to be a cardiologist. I was sort of heading down that path.
Which cardiologist means?
Heart doctor.
Got it.
And along the way, I started working in a psychiatric hospital, and I started running their medical services. I became an expert in medical management of psychiatric patients. Then I started getting way down into the addiction thing and detoxing people. And the director of a program asked to be the co-director, and I was like, "Oh, dude, I'm you know." He goes, "Don't worry, just when I'm away, you cover me. You're there all the time anyway. You're seeing all our patients." Then he quit 6 months later. Now he's the director of a program, so I had to really educate myself on addiction medicine. That was in late 80s, early 90s. And I spent the next 20 years working in addiction medicine, which is sort of the crossroads of medicine and psychiatry and everything else, psychology and family therapy and everything else.
So
when I did Celebrity Rehab, which was running a team, you don't get to see. Think about Celebrity Rehab. You didn't see a lot of treatment. You saw a lot of the chaos that the patients were into
right.
and stuff. You didn't see a lot of treatment. But I ran a team there, and we did treatment.
Right.
And so I'm sort of I was the medical director of a big treatment center in an acute setting.
But you're essentially a doctor.
Yes. I'm specifically
you're a
that.
Doctor.
Yes.
Internist.
Yeah. Addictionologist, internist. I do both now. Addiction medicine and internal medicine. And addiction is where all the mental health stuff comes in.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it. All right. I have so many fucking questions.
All right.
And hopefully this will be the first time I have you because I don't want to go down the life and times of Dr. Joe.
Sure.
But hopefully you'll come back. But how do you deal with the, there's celebrity, but then like people like come in for treatment, like that dichotomy, because like my doctors are all old Jews.
Yeah, yeah.
Which are, listen, I'm going to be biased. I've never been to a non-old Jew doctor. When I was born, Dr. Gribbets, he was fucking like 100 years old. All my doctors, and I have tons.
Yeah.
I got bronchial this. I got ulcerative colitis. I got all the
Jews. You see? Why?
I have ulcerative colitis.
Did they want to take your colon ever? Or they ever take
it? No, they never talked about it. It's never gotten that far.
Are you on Humira or something? Are you on?
Well, I don't want to go down too far down my... Yeah, but okay, I was on Humira, but that shit fucked me up.
It can, yeah.
It
yeah.
fucked me up.
There's no medicine that can't fuck you up.
No, but that shit fucked me up.
It's a heavy, heavy medicine.
I know, and they don't tell you that shit.
There's not a medicine you can put in your mouth or shoot into your whatever that can't kill you. all medicines.
Yeah, but the, it's fucked my immune system up.
Yeah, that's how it's designed
to do. I had serious bronchial stuff from it. I don't know what to do at this point. My ulcerative colitis.
You've seen a pulmonary guy?
I see them all.
Infectious disease?
Infectious disease. Everything. I see them all, Doc. All right. I see them all. I don't know if there's like church and state or there's egos. Like some of them communicate, some of them don't communicate.
I mean, this is practice styles, yeah.
And
some of them are really good about it, some are just not.
Yeah, I mean, I seem to lure them in just by you know, like just the persistence, because I used to just be like, whatever. But now, like me and my wife has really helped me because of all the health stuff.
Yeah. You seem so healthy. It's so crazy to think of you as having this
chronic illness. I'm all fucked up. Hopefully I won't have a coughing fit. Hopefully I will have a coughing fit during this podcast. So you can see
what it is. I'll get my stethoscope out and see what's going on.
Can you do like a full diagnosis?
I can listen. I can tell you what I'm hearing.
All right. So, but how do you deal with like being like the world's most sort of, you're a famous person, but you're also a doctor. When people come see you, they're vulnerable.
All right. So my medical practice, I stopped seeing new patients years ago. So it's all patients I've been following for decades. And I'm very attached to them. In fact, I continue to practice specifically because they're all like, please, please don't stop. We want, you know, so I don't stop. And they all are sick now. They're old and sick, and they've got, you know, very complicated medical problems.
You're their doctor.
And I'm the doctor, and they've been with me since this all started. So before television. And so they think it's kind of cute and funny that I do these other things.
Got you.
Just as long as I'm there for them, they're fine.
Got you.
And which is what
they're not
I
all
be.
Freaked out.
Not
like
at
you
all.
Don't have you because you can't have groupie patients.
No.
Because that would be like
that'd be a problem.
Right?
It'd be weird.
Like I'm sick, doctor, you know, like let me cough on you or whatever, like and they're fans.
That'd be weird. But on the addiction side, most of the patients I got were through the hospital. In other words, they were admitted directly through the hospital, or they were other doctors' patients that were admitted onto our ward. Okay, so people, I didn't really want people to come in for me, because I treated the acute side. I treat them in the hospital. I didn't do all the follow up and all that stuff. I usually gave that to somebody else.
Got you.
So I was busy enough dealing with the sick, acute, you know, acutely ill drug addict, and in that respect, we would have sort of two kind of versions would come in. People would go, they'd look up, you know, they'd be sick. When they'd come in, they'd go, aren't you that? And I'd go, yeah. And they go, okay, just help me. They just want to get better.
Right.
And they don't really care.
When they're addiction.
When they're really sick.
So this is drugs, alcohol.
This is drugs, alcohol, whatever. This is in the psychiatric hospital. These are really sick people. And the other ones would come in, and, you know, Shelly and Bob, and these are all people. That was my team. I worked with them for years.
Those are real people.
Those are real people, real excellent, and they still work in the field.
Right.
But somebody's
Bob's the one who looks like Bob Dylan.
He's the hat, the
with
glasses.
The hat, yeah. And he's
Shelly's
scruffy.
The blonde girl with the glasses.
Yes.
And they would occasionally I'd bring him in. We had this sort of room where we'd interview them and stuff, and sometimes the whole staff would come in. And we occasionally had this thing where people would go, yeah, I was watching TV and I watched this show and I just couldn't deny it anymore. And they kind of look up and they go, and you were there? And you were there.
Oh,
and
I
called it the Wizard of Oz moment. It's like, and you were there.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And then we go, yeah, we know. And
they are like freaking out because they're like thinking
a little
they're
bit.
Like, think they're hallucinating.
Not hallucinating. They just like it's like what it must have been like to see Harvey Weinstein do his thing. Like, it's confusing to them.
Right.
It's like, what's going on here?
Right.
And then they would just go, okay, I just help me. And we did a great job. And so they were happy to, and they'd immediately forget about all that. They would very quickly forget about all of it.
Because they're in need.
They're in need. They're sick. They want to get better. We do a good job. They're happy.
And celebrity rehab.
Yeah.
Okay, because Loveline was sort of the classic show
that
sort of got you out of just being a doctor. Like, people found out, like, this Dr. Drew guy. But celebrity rehab for me was number one because I knew there was people on there that I knew.
Who did you know?
Sizemore.
Oh, yeah.
Jeff Conway, I was a fan. I mean, you know.
Great guys, right? I mean, just like the greatest guys with bad addiction. Like, terrible.
So how does it work? Like, how does a show like that, because it's so serious and then it's being filmed. Like, are they in there being treated?
Yeah. So at the beginning, I think the producers thought they were filming a reality show, and I didn't know what that meant. I was just doing treatment, and I always would tell them, things always get interesting in drug treatment. Just roll your damn cameras. But the producers started going in and going, this is the very beginning. They go, Mary Carey, Jessica Sierra, do you know what she said about John? I heard this. I was like, what are you doing? These are sick people. Are you? And it got to the point a couple seasons down the line where I was like, okay, guys, if we're going to do this, no producer can get anywhere near my patients under any circumstances. And for me, you fucking do not speak to me. You can do not make eye contact with me.
The producers.
Nobody. Nobody makes eye contact with me. You can ask. I'm willing to answer four questions. Doctor, how's the patient doing? What's the aftercare plan? How much is it going to cost? What's the family therapy? You ask me one more goddamn thing, I'm walking off this fucking set.
Because they're essentially they're there to stir things up.
Yeah, they think they have to stir stuff up, and it's like no. You just roll cameras. Everything. Believe me, things happen on a drug treatment center. It's always high drama. People are sick and intense, and things come up, and it's just always that way. And so they didn't have to. They were happy eventually just to let cameras roll. They finally trusted it.
And when the cameras are rolling, they're 24/7.
Yeah, there are guys running around all over the place. You know, there's cameras in every corner of everything.
They pick up everything.
And then there are guys. You know, there's like five camera teams.
But how do you mix that? Like sort of. You're a doctor, you deal with real people with real shit, but then like producer, not producer, this show's coming back. Naturally, like in your head, like now? How do you sort of balance that?
Now?
Yeah.
Now, well, it's different balance what I'm trying to do with television versus what I'm doing when we're doing a show like Celebrity Rehab, where to me it's about the patients and just getting it done without them getting interfered with.
Right.
Right. And much to my amazement, those patients did very well, better than average, even though some horrible things happened.
Right.
And we can talk about that. I mean, I'm devastated with the ones that happened. And of course, it was my peers that killed these patients.
Right.
No one gets that. I got them off everything. They were doing great. Jeff Conway was tap dancing. Mike Starr was living independently. One of my peers puts them back on opiates because they say my back hurts. Back on opiates, dead 3 weeks.
When you say peers, you mean
other doctors. Put them back on opiates, dead 3 weeks later.
So let's talk about the opiates.
That was so heartbreaking.
Like, you're doing a documentary now on opiates?
Yeah, I'm going to work on that, yeah.
It's been discussed a lot. Trump is talking about it. It's like, you know, the closest thing that I could recollect to is like the crack cocaine.
This is way worse.
Why? And what are opiates? Like, explain opiates, it in basic terms.
Painkillers.
Okay.
Painkillers. 150 people dead a day.
150 people?
In this country.
Die a day?
A day.
Because they're addicted to...
Oh, no. Well, there's for every one that dies, there's five that overdose that don't die. So, yes, they're addicted to opiates. And usually, it's one of two things. They're given a benzodiazepine with the opiate, so a Valium-like drug with the opiate, which is a deadly combination, given all the time.
By doctors?
Yep. Or they're IV drug users, and they get exposed to fentanyl. That's a heavy, it's like a hot shot.
Okay, so how are the doctors still doing this when
it's
they know?
It's stopping. It's slowing down now. They did... Mike, there was a the part that people don't know. You want to blame the drug companies, which no doubt they were duplicitous. The way this all happened was in the 90s, well-meaning patient advocacy groups hired attorneys and started muscling doctors to treat pain more aggressively. And I'm sure the drug companies were behind the scenes of funding some of this stuff. I'm sure of it. But it got so out of control where doctors were being prosecuted as reckless negligence if they didn't treat pain adequately. They were going to prison. They were getting fined. There's a famous case in California, and it freaked us out. We all just went, oh, my God. And they got it to the point where there was an absolute discipline of had the following three priorities, and all doctors knew it and practiced it. Pain is what the patient says it is. Pain control is what the patient says it is. And pain assessment is the fifth vital sign. Remember this bullshit from the pain, the fifth vital sign. As important as your pulse or blood pressure.
Right.
Hey, your pulse is zero. What's your pain control?
Right.
It's like, your pulse is 150. I don't care. What's your pain control?
Right.
They think about how insane that was.
That's crazy.
Insane. And most of us kind of opted out and started sending anybody with pain that we couldn't easily control. There's your bronchiectasis, whatever you've got
bronchiectasis.
Bronchiolitis or bronchiectasis?
Bronchiolitis. I can't even fucking say it. That's how bad it is. That's
nasty.
Nothing to cough that I just
did. That is nasty.
Well,
I could hear the obstruction. Bronchiolitis is
the lungs.
Collapse of the airways, right?
Because I have
of
problems.
Infection. Probably your immune system was backed up. It couldn't fight it. It broke down the airways. Now you got a broken down airway.
Yeah.
It can heal.
I need help. But I want to dog ear this question for later. Why did Jews perpetually, especially Ashkenazi Jews, have a propensity for phlegm? Later we get to that. I want to know why.
Is Gary Ashkenazi?
I don't know what it is or what it isn't, but I know that the Jews in the East Coast, particularly in my family, we have a propensity for phlegm. I don't know why.
I don't have an answer to that.
Okay.
But we have lots of crappy genes, though. Ashkenazi Jews.
I want to hear about
lots of crappy genes.
Okay, we're going to finish with...
We're going to test you for that, too.
Yo, I need full testing. I need full...
Ulcerative colitis is a common gene.
I got all... Process. I know, that's from the neuroses.
Yeah.
That's from the neuroses.
Well, that's what people say. I'm not so sure that's true.
You know what? Let me tell you something. I truly believe it's from the neuroses and its nerves because I've had it since I'm 16.
Yeah.
And when I know it's from, like, I don't know what it starts from. When I was 16, I was going through a stress-induced thing, and it came, and I believe that it's from that. And I believe that stress and, like, and concern alleviates it and doesn't alleviate it. I know it.
There's an interaction. There's an overlap. I don't think it causes it. Let's put it that way. But I can see where it can make it worse.
Let me tell you something, doctor. I've had it for so long, and there should be groups because
there are.
Where are they? Because, do you know
inflammatory bowel support groups? I'm sure they're.
You need to hook me up with a good one. I could run the groups because I've tried all the goddamn medicines, and I know that there's other people out there that have had to take shits. Like you ride on the 101 freeway. That's a freeway to you. That's a public bathroom to me.
Yeah.
That's like a place to use the bathroom. Now, luckily, I've been in remission for a few years, but I have no problem. Like, flower pots, bathrooms. Like, I have a whole procedure I need to do, and it's not a joke.
101 doesn't even have a shoulder.
Oh, no, there's tricks to the trade. You go on the side, you pull under a tunnel.
Homeless encampments.
There's all.
What are you doing?
There's
all. You sharing with friends down there?
There's all sorts of tricks. The 101, the 405, the 10. Like, yeah. I know all the places. Like, any bathroom, I could tell from, like, a Starbucks, like, the codes. Yeah. I know the whole thing.
Oof.
But enough with that. Well, we'll get back to the Ashkenazis and the phlegm and the bowel movements.
The opiates. Yeah. So we punted to pain management doctors because everyone got scared that they were going to not treat it adequately. So, okay, fine, let the pain guys do it. And those guys were the ones that were crazy, ridiculously aggressive with the opiates. I had many patients killed by those guys, many.
So what's going to stop this? Because that's...
It stopped. It's better. It's getting better. Finally, the CVS is only allowing a week of prescribing at a time. California, most states have an opioid monitoring system now. Doctors are finally going the other way, even the ones that were trained in a different manner. So it's slowing down. It's slowing down. The problem now is we've got all these addicted people, and what are we going to do with that?
So what are you going to do with that?
I don't have a good answer. The answer the government wants us to do is put people on Suboxone, which is a replacement drug like methadone.
Oh.
But
like it's a major, thousands and thousands or millions in this country.
I forget.
Hundreds of thousands?
Oh, yeah. I think it's millions now. I think it's millions.
And where could people afford these drugs? It seems like it's a high end, like to get a prescription, or it's on the street, or people making it?
It's expensive on the street. The insurance pays for it a lot of times. And doctors are prescribing this stuff by the ton. And when they cut them off, they go to heroin, which is cheap.
You're conscious, you're a doctor, and you're also, you're in the public eye. Healthcare, insurance, not insurance.
I'm so confused.
Do you have any idea?
I am as confused as anybody.
Like,
I don't have a good solution. I suspect the only way we're going to solve this is some sort of tiered system.
Which
like
means?
Like a public system and a private system, or something like they have in Britain, where there's two tiers. Like, let's get better insurance going for everybody, but not lock everybody into it. Let's give everybody options of other ways of doing it.
Okay.
And not Canada. Canada, oh my God.
What's their situation?
They're a locked-in single-payer system, and it's just, if you really hear what's going on there, they accept a level of care that would never go here. Never.
People accept a level of care?
There, that people would not accept.
So what country in the world?
I was heard Germany had a pretty good program, yeah.
They have good health care.
And again, England does okay, but has a two multi-tiered system. You know, and people are really uncomfortable. Is that fair? Is that not fair? I don't have a strong opinion. I just know that locking everybody and not giving people options does not seem fair either, and does not seem like it's going to work.
What is the term? This is a left turn. What does the term narcissist actually mean?
It actually is a description of a defensive strategy that comes from early injuries, what are called narcissistic injuries, where kids aren't getting what they need from their parents typically, or they're getting traumatized by them. So they aren't getting the kind of emotional nourishment that they need, or they learn that the outside world or other people or their emotions are a source of distress. So they either disconnect from those emotions or don't continue to develop a strong connection with those emotions by virtue of their connection with adults. And so they develop a layer on top. They leave the emotion, they leave the spontaneous primary emotions behind, and they develop sort of a pseudo self on top from which they extract from the world what they need. And often because they feel injured and tiny on the inside, they need that extraction to make them feel pumped up. And so narcissism is a sense of needing to get a lot out of the world to buttress yourself, and it just keeps going. You know, you keep feeling you need more and more and more to feel okay. But really what you are is injured, disconnected, and feelings don't matter.
Right. I got you. So feelings, and you have to be in touch and acknowledge your feelings. Like if it had been me who sent the magazines to Howard and Robin and the rest of the savages jumped on it, I would go right to fight or flight.
Yeah.
You can acknowledge right off the top, this hurt my feelings.
It hurt me. Yeah, I was crushed.
Okay. So this term narcissist, this has been thrown around a lot.
It's not egotism, which is different, which is self-preoccupation, which can be part of, you know, narcissism, but it's not a self-importance. In fact, underneath, it's a deep sense of longing and emptiness, and oftentimes it's a feeling of smallness, but you're using this kind of pseudo thing, which is all you really know is yourself, because the injury was a long time ago.
Got you.
To interact in the world.
So what do you make of a diagnosis? If you were just diagnosing just on everything you've seen on TV, Trump, the word narcissist is so associated with him.
Yeah.
What just based on everything you've seen from him on TV and his behavior, what is that behavior?
Well, you got to remember, I don't think about narcissism as pejorative, right? Everyone wants to put a negative.
What the fuck does that word mean?
I don't think of it that way. In fact, I have great compassion for narcissists, right? And I also think narcissists are very useful in certain situations.
Like?
Fighter pilot. You want that guy to be a narcissist. You want him to feel, you know, invincible and huge and big and, you know, whatever. You want him, you know, also to be maybe an alcoholic too and love the thrill, because or have that proclivity to that, because those people really are at their best when in extreme situations.
Got you.
Right? And so President of the United States, when I look at most of the guys and gals that have been in and around that office, they're all narcissists, right?
Right.
You have to be that to want to be in that position. And I guess that's a reasonably adaptive personality structure. The question that everyone has to ask themselves is somebody a malignant narcissist? And a malignant narcissist is somebody that really, really can't empathize with other people. They don't really care about other people, other people's feelings.
Based on what you see, what the fuck do you think Trump is? Like, if you're just diagnosed and you're not even Trump, like, you're not even diagnosing the president, and you were just, like, shown videotape of somebody's father, and they were, like, showing you this.
Oh, that guy looks narcissistic, looks hypomanic, which a lot of business guys are. Right?
Hypomanic.
They get lots done. They never sleep. There are a lot of business guys are that way.
Right.
And looks kind of...
A lot of successful people.
Yep.
And looks athletes, too. Yeah.
It's a common thing in successful people.
Right.
And so he looks kind of, you know, narcissistic too. So then I'd go, well, what's going on with the family? Are they okay? The kids like him? Do they feel like they have a good relationship with him? That's sort of the next way you assess that. And I was thinking about this early in the days when I was trying to understand the whole phenomenon of Mr. Trump. And again, I'm super moderate. I can see both sides of everything.
Right.
I don't know what's right for the world.
Just the personality.
To me, that's hubristic to be able to know what's
that's
right.
That's another good fucking word. I mean, you're a smart guy, man. You got some good fucking words, Doc.
I'll come back. And I was thinking about it, and the Trump thing, I wonder if he got a narcissist. And I started thinking, well, I'm sure there have been other guys like that. And I thought, well, oh, yeah, Andrew Jackson, oh, yeah, total nut.
Right.
And that was kind of, I had some problems with it. And I thought, where's that? I went, oh, my God, Teddy Roosevelt. Teddy Roosevelt, severe narcissist, manic as hell. And that worked out okay.
Uh-huh.
So just because somebody is one thing or another doesn't mean they are or are not going to be a good president, which is interesting, right?
Got you.
It's very interesting to me. I'm like,
I got you.
You'd think like, oh, man, you wouldn't want Teddy Roosevelt in an office with a red button. But there he was, and he did pretty good.
Right.
He's on Mount Rushmore.
It doesn't have to be necessarily negative.
It doesn't have to go badly. Let's put it that way. It can go okay for the country.
All right.
But I don't know. What do I know? It's like trying to predict, like having a crystal ball or something. It's uncomfortable, right?
It's uncomfortable. And for me, I definitely see things about him in myself. Because like I was like, you know, I've never given shit about politics, ever. You might say that's stupid or not, but I've always voted with my heart, not with my taxes. I'm like, this person seems better than this person. This motherfucker has, like, I actually had a dream about him.
Wow.
Have you ever met
him?
No, I've seen him around New York.
Yeah.
Have you ever met him?
No, my son, my wife had, and I've seen him around New York too. I've been at places where he's been and stuff. Yeah,
but I had an actual dream like that. I was like attacking him, like a fight. You know what I mean? Like I was like,
how'd it go?
I just was hitting him and shit. Like, and you know, like people were like, you're hitting the president. You're going to get in so much trouble. And it wasn't like the violence in the dream. Like I was making contact. It was more like, I think I stopped the dream because I was like, thought I was going to get in trouble for like assaulting the president of the United States.
Yeah.
So, but I see things in him, in myself. Because I was like, why is it bothering me so much? Why is it bothering me so much? I just see stuff about it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like I see stuff about him, like in myself.
Yeah.
But I'm not the president. Some people are saying like, oh, well, you want the president to be a regular person. I want the president to be way better than me.
So the fact that he's like you is what really bothers you.
Yeah, I don't. I shouldn't be the president.
That's interesting. Yeah, I get it.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I shouldn't be the fucking president. The president shouldn't be stepping on toes, you know, and disrespectful. And like, that should be like every other.
Should be Michael Rapaport.
That's me. That's fine to do that. There's no problem with that. You know what I mean? I don't have anything at stake.
Well, but to be fair, I mean, when I think about the phenomenon, the historical phenomenon that we're in, I think that's what the people that voted him in want. They wanted a wrecking ball. They were just so tired of the, you know, the way I think people felt judged and put upon and controlled and tyrannized a little bit by a political system, and they just wanted to wreck it. And that's why the approval rating for the people that put him in stays where it is. Because they kind of wanted that wrecking. They want more, I think. Right?
I think they do.
One guy described it as a murder weapon. They wanted him to be a murder weapon in Washington. Like, wow, that's interesting. Isn't
somebody
it?
Said that?
They conceptualized as him as a murder weapon for a group of people that felt disenfranchised and angry and upset.
A group of people that felt disenfranchised. Yeah. Give me a fucking break, man.
I'm just saying, that's what
I know. It's crazy. All right, I'm going to let you go. So I got two more questions.
Okay, all right.
Marijuana,
yeah,
legal, not legal. California, it's legal. Right. We're in California.
Okay, here's my deal. No opinion because I don't make laws.
Right.
I don't. You know, if they want me advice, I can see pros and cons. I understand. Colorado and Washington, there's been some problems medically, and you know, in terms of young people and veterinary problems and a lot of stuff, a lot of consequences. But they seem to feel like the net progress has been positive, like they've learned from it and they're sorting it out. Okay. And I don't make laws. I help people with their medical problems within the socio-historical context in which we live.
Right.
People make the laws. If they want that, fine. I will tell you that having something illegal helps me help people that can't stop using that substance.
Gotcha.
And I've certainly treated lots of marijuana addicts in my day, but
like actually addicted to it.
Oh yeah. Oh, it's yeah, and it's bad when they really get addicted. It's very hard for them to stop. I introduced you to some of the marijuana acts. They are, it's tough, man. But they're not common. It's not that common,
right?
And so should everybody else be, you know, restricted because a small group has a problem? A
couple of bad apples will spoil the party for everybody else.
And the logic of our laws around substances are positively bizarre,
right?
LSD is Schedule I. That shit has therapeutic value, and MDMA should be used for PTSD, but doctors can't even get near it because it's an evil drug that cannot be touched.
Wait, the idea LSD is good? Because I've only heard crazy stories about it.
The point is it may have utility is what I'm saying. And the fact that we moralize chemicals, a molecule as good or bad, is totally insane.
I got you.
Totally insane. We have chemicals and molecules that people have trouble get out of control with, and we want to help them with that. Sure, fine, make it illegal, and we can help those people. But then don't just throw them in a can. Get them treatment for this medical problem.
Got you.
You know, so I don't know. Our laws are very bizarre, and the fact that they have a moral base to them is, you know, a good drug and a bad drug. Alcohol's good, tobacco's good. MDMA is horrible. It can't, you know, it has no potential to be around human beings. Like what? It's bizarre. Alcohol is a cancer, a carcinogen to every tissue in our body.
Alcohol is.
Alcohol. Tobacco is well known as it's for heart disease and vascular disease and carcinogenicity in the lung and mouth and head and neck and whatnot. Same thing with alcohol, head and neck cancer, common.
So who regulates this? Like, would you ever think about like being like the doc, what is it? The medical so-and-so. What is it? Surgeon general.
I would rather.
You'd be a cool surgeon. We need people like you, compassionate.
Well, first of all, they end up being, those are military officers that end up in that. So they're always wearing uniforms, right? Those are military people that get that office. But let me just say, I would rather, if I were going to get involved in this, I would get involved for reals. Get voted in and really work on legislation.
Of course.
I mean, there are other physicians in, I'm we could do a whole thing on my fascination with Washington and our founding fathers and how our government was founded and the great ideas that I'm just fascinated by it. And so to have ever been a part of that would be amazing. But I don't know if there's time left in my life to do something like that.
It seems like a real commitment.
Yeah.
All right, my final question before I let you go. You sing opera? I used to, yeah.
I'll do sporting events now. I'll do the national anthem at sporting events.
As an opera singer?
As a singer, yeah.
But do you sing it in opera style?
I only have one style.
So like, what do you mean?
Let me find a video of it for you. Can I do that?
Fine.
All right.
Did you see 60 Minutes last night?
No, I did not.
You have to watch.
What was it?
You have to watch 60 Minutes last night. There's a 12-year-old prodigy. I believe she's from London or Scotland or fucking Ireland. Yeah. I don't fucking know. Yeah. You need to watch this because, number one, she's a genius. Yeah. Emma. Her name is Emma.
Was she on America's Got Talent or Britain's Got Talent?
No. This person's like, she's for reals. But as a personality, because you can see the genius in her, but as a personality, I think you'll be fascinated by it. Because you could tell right away she's truly genius.
Okay.
But you should watch it because it is a trip.
Is it musical genius?
Total musical genius.
Well, here's the end of me singing for the Kings, just the very end.
Shit, man. Let me see this. Holy shit. That's impressive.
There you go. That's intense singing at Fry's Hockey.
Were you scared to death?
First time I was scared crapless, yes. Because you've been to a Kings game lately?
I mean, I'm not a big hockey guy, but I go to sporting events. Right. But you walk out on the ice.
You're in the middle of the ice. The guys are going around you 60 miles an hour,
right?
Hitting pucks the whole time.
Right.
Lasers, spotlight. Right. The train horn going up. And then it all stops, goes dark, and then a spotlight comes on you.
And even if you rehearse beforehand, it doesn't.
Does it matter?
The bells and whistles aren't
scared,
there.
Crapless. And you can in Staples, you can practically feel people breathing on you because it's so close up. I did Dodger Stadium a couple times, and that was way easier because you have your back to the stadium, and you're singing to the bleachers in the outfield.
Right,
that was easy.
And there's more of a distance.
And they put the words up on the jumbotron.
Just in case.
Well, they just do it for the audience, and so I can one of the fears is I'm going to forget the words of the national anthem.
Right.
Yeah.
So. All right, Dr. Drew, listen.
This is really fun, man. Really
I appreciate
fun.
It.
Thank you for inviting me. Thank you for coming on my radio show today. Congratulations on the book.
Thank you. This isn't about me, doctor. This is about you. But the one thing that ain't about me, we're going to get a bronchial. I need some doctors from you.
Okay.
Will you hook me up with some doctors?
Let me see who you're seeing, and I'll let
verify.
You know. Okay, yeah.
Because I feel comfortable with the old Jews. They make me feel like, you know, like I'm, that's what I'm used to. Again, I was delivered Dr. Gribbets. He looked like a Jewish frog, like a gigantic Jewish frog. So I'm comfortable with that. But I want to run the paper because the coughing and the throat, like all of July.
Bronchitis is challenging. It's challenging, man.
I know.
Because as you see, everything we give you has side effects. So they don't want to be the stuff you get for bronchitis. It's kind of nasty.
What is your take on holistic? It's almost like doctors, medical doctors, can't validate anything from holistic. But you're a healthy guy. You're in LA. Like you have to have when you've had to have done a juice cleanse.
No,
you never did a juice cleanse.
No, because that just the whole concept is bizarre to me. But I listen, just Mike. Whenever somebody wants to cleanse toxins, all I do to them is say, "Look, I'm a scientist. Just put. Here's a piece of paper." Show me the chemical formula of a toxin, of just one toxin. Forget all the toxins. Just throw it up there. And then once you've written that chemical down, show them the stoichiometry of how it's withdrawn from the physiology of the cells. And then show me the mechanism of that, and when that toxin you've written down there, show me how it has effects in the liver or wherever else you're saying it has an effect. Just write that physiology down, just the basics, nothing fancy, no biochemistry. Just give me the structure. Of course.
I don't know what they
know what they're talking about. It's just the whole idea. It's just something that humans like.
The juice cleanse?
Yeah, it just sounds like a good thing. And so people go for it. You know, it makes no sense biologically whatsoever. And all somebody has to do is just write down the biology for me and I'll take a look at it.
Three tips to being healthy. Basic tips.
Basic tips are, it's the old fat. Your grandma knew it. I work out 30 minutes every day.
30 minutes. You don't have to do 2 hours.
Don't have to do 2 hours. Resistance. For guys my age, some running is a good idea.
Right.
Even though you've got to watch the hips and knees and things.
Right.
But it's very important. Everyone knows the proper dietary issues. You know, limit your fats, limit the animal products, watch the dairy fats. You know, if you want to be vegetarian, That's a tall order. Go ahead.
I gotta talk to you about that next time.
It's fine. But
fucking vegans with their shit.
Not my thing. Look, we have a generalized dentition and a generalized gut. We are meant to be eating lots of stuff.
I want to talk to you about that next time.
I'm not super schooled in it, but I would just, you know, okay. And then so exercise, diet, adequate sleep. You know, I used to do a lot of work in a dementia home. And I noticed first time I started walking around there, all the men had pictures at the bedside of them in their peak in their career, with them admiral in a ship, standing outside the car dealership they owned. And I thought, wow, they're all demented. All these guys were super successful. So I started talking to the family. I was like, were they stressed? Was it stress? No, they loved their work. Only common feature I could find, they didn't sleep. Mm. They were stressed. They didn't sleep.
It can make you nuts.
So I think sleep, particularly as you age, is a really important thing. So sleep, exercise, diet, basic diet stuff. Treat medical problems when they occur, right? I've got high blood pressure. I've got high cholesterol. I've got, you know, all that stuff. And I've been treated along the way and with tiny little bits of medicine. That's all I needed. Working great. I'd have vascular disease now if I hadn't treated that in my 40s. Right?
All right. All right.
So anyway, so that's the basics. Keep it simple.
All right,
keep
that's it simple. The basics.
Much more important that we lead good lives. We've lost really track of that, to lead a good life.
I got you.
And good lives, you know, mean having some fun, but mostly it's about
not too much fun. And get fucking crazy.
Don't get crazy, but it's mostly about other people and actively participating in the world and doing things you like doing and creatively leading a good life. We've gotten way off track.
Oh, got
focusing
you.
On things that aren't that important. Living forever.
Got
talk
you.
About narcissistic. I mean, nobody's going to live forever. Sorry.
Right.
But if you can live a good life while you're here, and by a good life, I really mean like make a difference.
Right.
That's the most important.
All right. The Good Doctor, Dr. Drew, thanks for joining the I Am Rappaport Stereo Podcast. All right, you've heard of Watch What Happens Live. We've all seen the post game on TNT with Shaq, Ernie, and Charles and company. And of course, you've all seen, you know, After Stranger Things or Beyond Stranger Things or The Talking Dead After The Talking Dead. This is the first ever episode of After The Shame Game. So if you don't follow me on social media, you may not be aware of The Shame Game, okay? The Shame Game is when me, Dean Collins, the young shooter, we take people who have slid up into my DMs or openly criticized me in ways that we don't think is funny.
No.
And we shame them on social media. Here's two clips from the now controversial worldwide phenomenon, Shame Game. All right, welcome back to another edition of The Shame Game. My name is Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Dean Collins.
So a lot of people like to pop shit on social media. They like to slide up into the DMs and talk shit on Twitter and Instagram. Well, we like to give them that fame they want. That shame fame.
All right, the first comment comes from who called you a clown.
Ooh, you called me a fucking clown? I see you got your coveted Instagram checkmark. What's the application fee for a fucking nobody to get that checkmark? You little fashionista fuckboy. You're wearing Janet Jackson's jeans from the 1990s. You're a fucking motivational speaker. Motivating what? Dressing like a fucking douchebag? Nice arm patch, fucknose.
Who says, dude, you and your Jew friends should have been gassed like you deserve to be. You go to Ottawa Glandorf High School in Ohio. You like to talk shit? I like to talk shit too. Mike, drop 20 pounds. You're starting to look like shit.
Fuck.
But when you start talking about burning Jews, we don't put your pictures on the shame game. We call you fucking principal.
Yes, the principal.
That's exactly what I did. I called Principal Soklo of Ottawa Glandorf High School, and you can expect a big announcement on that loudspeaker.
You're getting called into the principal's office, and you made the shame game. That's called a double whammy. Okay, so after that last clip of the shame game, there has been a major fallout, major blowback, major controversy from the shame game. As we said, we told this one kid who said he wanted the Jews to die.
No, that's not what he said. He said he wanted to gas the Jews and your Jew friends, i.e. me, because I'm Jewish.
All of them. So we actually did call his principal. We're not fucking around with the shame game.
Nope.
If you're going to go on my DMs and you're going to slide on my page and say an N-word lover and a wigger this and you're going to burn Jews, we're going to shame you.
Right. There's consequences.
And this little prick said it over and over and over. And we called the school, and the blowback was big, real. Dean Collins was on the front lines. So Dean Collins, this first episode of After the Shame Game, explained to the people what has happened since we went live with the Shame Game episode 3.
Right. Okay. So basically, you know, as you know, the kid said he wanted to gas the Jews, and that was his really funny joke. I found out exactly
where he went to school, his high school, all that stuff. And I got on the phone and I called Principal Selgo, who's actually a really nice guy. We spoke for a half hour this morning. I got 3 missed calls from him and a voicemail, 6 a.m. my time, 7 a.m. my time. And so I returned the call. He was very aware of what was going on.
Social media is a motherfucker. Now, when you slide up into the DMs, that might not be a motherfucker, but when you get put on the shame game and it's on World Star,
right?
It's on Barstool, it's all over my page, then social media becomes a motherfucker.
And it baffles me that these people do it with their names. They're not anonymous. They don't create anonymous accounts. They're private, and they have their name out there. And it's like, listen, that's written. That's on paper. You sent that out, and there's consequences. So,
and it's one thing to talk shit. Mike Rapp, you big nose fuck.
Right. You pussy,
fat
fuck you.
Anything. Your movies suck.
Cool.
You're irrelevant. I'm irrelevant, but you're in my page.
Right.
All that's cool.
They're entitled to their opinions,
You're entitled
though.
To your opinion, but when you get into racial,
anti-Semitic,
and just going a little above and beyond the call of duty, you're gonna get put on the shame game.
And
I'm gonna just say this: there's so many people we have lined up for the shame game, we can't even keep up.
Oh no!
We can't even keep up with the volume of the people that we have lined up for the shame game.
Right.
Keep going,
shooter. No, yeah, and so, and just a quick thing is, the second that we put these people on blast and their usernames, it's almost like a magic trick, wouldn't you say? It's like we put
don't give your techniques. Don't do your techniques.
No. I'm just saying what it is, once you put their thing up, poof, their Instagrams are gone. It's like we did a trick for everybody. They're gone. They've deleted their accounts. They're ashamed of what they've said. They've tried to change their names. So I spoke to Principal Selgo.
But I just want to say this, Dean. I just want to publicly acknowledge your greatness. You could be an FBI or like a PI. A PI. Because the way the shooter tracks them down, we're not going to give you our techniques.
I'm not going to say shit.
Don't tell your techniques.
I would never.
Okay. Don't tell your techniques. But I just want to publicly say thank you.
Thank you for appreciating that, because I like to pride myself on my detective work. And I just want to let everybody know who is listening that if you decide that you want to pop shit and get into the DMs and say something horrible, I can guarantee you I will have your entire family's phone number in 5 minutes.
And you hate Jews? You want to kill Michael Rapport? Or you want to threaten me with a baseball bat?
Right.
Well, we want your wife to know that you're into that,
and
too.
I've done it. And I've contacted many people. For instance, today, I didn't even tell you this, Michael.
Okay.
Some guy said that he wanted to,
By the way, this first ever shame game, we're doing it from Dean's car. So if it sounds a little funky, Miles Davis, producer extraordinaire, he hates bad sounds. Sorry, Miles.
Sorry about that, Miles.
Listen, the shame game, we do it out in the streets, and we're doing after the shame game out in those same streets.
Exactly. We're
Continue.
Dedicated.
Sorry.
Anyway, no, that's fine. But yeah, so I'm trying to think of what I was saying, but
you're saying today something happened.
Oh, right. So today something happened. So this guy, he's in my comments and he says, "Come to my hood, you will get murdered."
Oh,
this is what he said
nice.
To me, okay? So guess what? 2 minutes later, I found him and I found his wife, and the wife was appalled. They have a little baby girl, and she could not believe, and she sent me a photo that she had called him, she had texted him saying, "This is not funny," and he said, "I'm so sorry, babe, it was a joke," and she is like, "I'm gonna talk to him tonight, this is really fucked up," and she is absolutely appalled. And so they're just little things like that where I will call your fiance,
yeah.
I will call your kids.
When you're making threats like that where it's like, you can get the feeling where it's like, No, this makes me uncomfortable.
No, this is, yeah, I was uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You're talking about murdering me?
Yeah,
guess
you're
what?
You're going to murder somebody?
I'll file a police report.
Yeah, well,
you
want to
call me a rat? You want to call me a snitch?
Really? You watched Departed too many times.
Yeah, you watched
this
think
isn't Goodfellas.
No, it's not Goodfellas.
We're not a rat. We're not a snitch. This isn't Law and Order, we're going to get that rat. You're not Joe Pesci.
No, you're a 15-year-old little white boy.
You're not Jack Nicholson. You're not Leonardo DiCaprio. Where's the rat? Play a clip from The Departed.
Go ahead.
I got this rat. This annoying. Eating fucking rat.
Yeah, that's The Departed, directed by the great Martin Scorsese. That's Leonardo Jack Nicholson. Okay, in real life, there's not rats. They're not doing that.
No, they're not doing that. So anyway, going back to Principal Selgo and making this kid an example, I want to let everybody know just like what the repercussions were, because a lot of people don't think that I was for real and that I called this principal. And I just want to tell you that we had a nice 30-minute conversation today. And that school, Ottawa Glandorf High School, I want to reiterate that the school, the principal, everyone, and the community, they're all great people. It doesn't reflect on their community. The kid said some horrible shit, and that's on him. So they're doing a high school assembly.
Yes.
With the entire school, okay? And they're making an example out of little
Yep.
And talking about gassing Jews and how your behavior over social media and the things that you say that you will be held accountable for. And I just want to give a little tidbit right now of while I'm on the phone, this is a funny little thing. While I'm on the phone with the principal, okay, of this school, one of classmates decides to DM me while I'm on the phone.
And what does he say?
He says, "Hey, you fucking pussy. You wanna rat out my classmate?
Rat out my classmates.
Because you wanna rat out my classmates?" And he said, "You uncultured swine." Mm. That's what he said, right? So I said to him, "My man, I'm on the phone with Principal Selgo, your principal.
Right now.
Right now. He's tried me 3 different times this morning, this and that, right?" And I said, "You have to be stupid. You have to be very ballsy to be sending me these DMs after what you saw happen to your teammate. You saw, right?" So his response to that, okay? This is a football player, a little beefhead. His name is So says, "I don't give a fuck." He says, "We don't play like that, Dean." Ooh. He goes, "We don't play like that over here, Dean." And then he says this. He says, "You may have put on blast, but he put you on gas."
Ooh.
And so I don't...
More Jew stuff.
Right, more Jew stuff, right? You want to talk about joking about the gas again, right? So I'm on the phone with Principal Selgo. I got no fucking problem talking about this kid. So he says, "Is there any other people?" I said, "Well, he had about 15 of his friends hit me up and say horrible things. It's funny, I got a guy talking to me right now while we're on the phone." He goes, "Give me the name. Give me the name. I don't want to put you in a bad position, but give me the name." I said, "All right, you know what? Fuck it. I'll give you the name."
So he gives
give him the name. 3 minutes later, I'm on the phone with, we're on the phone. We're having a great catch up. And he goes, "You know what? I'm sorry, Dean. I have to get off the phone. Outside my office."
The kid that was talking shit is right outside the office.
Within 3 minutes of sending me that, "You want to get gassed? You just got pulled from lunchtime or your class," and he's outside. And after that happened, I messaged him. I said, "Hey, buddy, how'd your meeting go?" And he said, "Good, thank you," laugh out loud. And I said, "Good, everything cool?" And he said, "I just want to tell you, I don't condone what Carter said. I don't believe in it."
Yeah,
he goes, And he says, "I sincerely apologize to you, Mr. Collins. I really don't want anything to happen." I said, "Good." And I blocked him. That'll teach you.
And we told the principal, "We don't want this kid to get in trouble." We didn't know that that this was going to go so viral.
I didn't realize.
We said, "We don't want the kid to get suspended. We don't want him to get us. We don't want to ruin his life." Listen, lesson learned for everybody. He's a young kid. Young kids shouldn't be talking about this. And I'm going to tell you something. And I talked to the great Dr. Drew, and he explains this. If you send, this kind of, shit on the internet, it's forever. And you're breaking laws. You think you're just talking shit.
Oh,
listen, people, I am a professional shit talker. When I'm talking about Lonzo Ball, or am I Eloing, or I'm talking my shit about LeBron or Donald Trump, I'm a professional shit talker. You'll notice I'm not making threats.
No, there's no threats.
Notice when I am doing my thing, I am not making threats. It's fun. See, I'm a professional shit talker.
The MVP of talking trash.
The book is called "This Book Has Balls: Sports Rants from the MVP of Talking
and
Trash."
And if you don't have the
title
book.
The title that's Earn, Not Given.
Right.
Earn, Not Given.
Right. No, absolutely.
And if you don't have the book, I suggest you get out there and read it.
I just want to say, you should go out. It's at Barnes & Noble. It's everywhere right
audio
now.
Audiobooks. You could listen to me audio, narrate the whole book. But I'm just saying, I'm a professional shit talker. I'm not threatening Lonzo Ball. It's all in good fun.
No, you're not saying, "Oh, I'm going to show up to Staples Center and I'm going to get you, Lonzo."
No, I'm not saying any of that stuff. It's all in good fun. So when you slide up in the DMs and you're making threats and all that, I'm uncomfortable.
Threats.
I'm uncomfortable.
And I'm uncomfortable too.
Yeah, and we're uncomfortable with it. Now you say, "Well, Mike, you could just stop the shame game." No. We're not stopping the shame game.
Nope.
Okay? We're going to continue
to
report.
In fact, we're just getting started with the shame game.
Listen, I'm going to tell you right now, the shame game is going to continue to get bigger and bigger, and it might be coming to a theater near you. That's all I'm saying.
Or the little screen.
That's all I'm saying to you.
Right.
Okay,
because
people are into the shame game, and I'm just saying, I'm not going to tip anything off. And this is Michael Rappaport. Okay, I don't just talk out my ass.
No.
When I tell you I'm coming out with a book, I'm not saying they're not selling it at hot dog stands.
No, you're coming out with the book and you're going out
Barnes
worldwide.
Barnes & Noble, Simon & Schuster. When I say it's the worldwide phenomenon, I Am Rappaport Stereo Podcast, it's the worldwide phenomenon, I Am Rappaport Stereo Podcast. We were number 2 last week.
Really?
We were number 2 last week. We're not fucking around here. We were above part of my take.
Okay.
They know what the deal is. We're coming for that fucking crown. They listen, right now they're the champs.
we're coming for that number one
spot.
Right,
and that's not a threat, by the way. He's saying he's coming for that crown.
It's competitive.
It's fun.
Those guys at the top, we're just little guys. We're coming for the crown. I'm just saying,
right.
When I say that people really wanted that shame game, and when I say that the shame game might be coming to a theater near you.
It might be coming to a theater near you.
That's it. Now, what was the rest of the blowback from this episode of the shame game? On this first ever episode of After the Shame Game.
Right. So, and you're only going to hear it here first because we haven't said what's actually happened. There's been a lot of comments. What's been going on, man. Right? So
read
I also want to say.
Read the comments.
I had an elementary school kid from Ottawa Glandorf High School say, the entire elementary school knows about this case and everybody knows at the high school. His Carter did not show up to school today, but his mother did show up to school today. Mm. And she had a nice one-on-one. I'm not bullshitting.
We're not making this up.
Okay, I spoke to the principal.
This isn't being made up.
No, so his mother came in, and they are going to make an example out of people like this, and this will hopefully teach young kids a lesson not to fucking pop shit
nope.
and say things that they wouldn't regret. You know these kids. You know people are scouting them, looking
yep.
immediately at their social medias,
yep.
and that shit stays online forever.
Kids, understand. This social media shit is no joke.
And we're not joking.
No joke. Sexting is no joke. If you're doing it with underage people and you ask for sexting, you're breaking the law.
And if you...
No. Be careful. Not if you just send a picture. If you ask
for
an underage person, you're breaking the law.
And I'd also like to talk about breaking the law. I'd like to say that if you said you are going to gas us, you're going to gas the Jews to my face... That's a hate crime.
That's a fucking hate
That's
crime.
That's an actual hate crime. Look
okay?
it up.
Okay? This is the first ever episode of After the Shaming. We're just here to help. And if need be, to bring that shame.
Right.
That
shame. And you know what?
That shame fame.
That shame fame. Right. And this is the shame. This is After the Shame Game.
This is After the Shame Game.
And we're just shame talking.
It's After the Shame Game.
Shame Game Live.
It's Shame Game Live. It's After the Shame Game discussing shame. Fame.
Right. Everything and all shamers. And if you want to DM me, find my Instagram at Dean Collins.
Yes.
And if there's anybody that has been saying anything horrible that you've seen,
we're gonna start bringing in guests.
We
want to start bringing in guests, particularly vulnerable. Like we want to stop the fucking cyber bullying.
I think you know what I think honestly, and I'm just telling you, Michael. This shame game is bigger than us.
Yes, it started out as like a fun thing, like, oh, you're saying fucked up things
right?
we're saying. No.
And people think that we're doing it for likes and comments and to
likes,
stay relevant.
Comments.
It's
relevant to my fucking dick.
No, I get enjoyment.
You know what's relevant? This loaf.
Right.
This loaf is relevant.
Okay, well, I wouldn't know that, but if you tell me that it's relevant, then it's relevant.
Yeah, this loaf is relevant.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
No, it's fine. But anyway.
This pipe is
no,
relevant.
I understand what the loaf and the pipe is.
Yep.
I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
But anyway, just DM me and let me know if you see any horribly racist shit or people that are fucking with you. And we are going to start bringing in celebrity guests.
Yep.
We're going to start talking to porn stars. Because
yep.
you know what? We've had a lot of people,
yep.
believe it or not, that want to be on this show.
Yep. A lot of people are trying to get on the shame game, and we're just trying to find the right person to bring in the first ever guest for the shame game.
Right. And we are foolproof 100% of the time. Everybody that lands on the shame game, their Instagrams are gone within the hour.
Oh,
so
yeah.
That's
if you're
also
talking crazy. For some reason, when you get that fame that you want, when you get the attention that you want, presto change, bye-bye.
Right. And what's your take on, because, you know, we released the Shame Game today, a new one, and we had a NYPD officer.
Well, no, he wasn't NYPD, was he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We had a cop.
And
say some terrible things. He doesn't
anti-Semitic.
Like, anti-Semitic, and we shamed that fuck.
We shamed him, and then the internet, you know, the vultures, you know, the internet takes it from there.
Yes.
And they found out what his precinct was.
Did they really?
Oh, I'm telling you right
wow.
now. They've already filed complaints.
Did they really?
I'm telling you right now. They all want this fuck gone, and this guy has changed his account 10 different times. Different usernames, different handles, different names.
Just get off the internet.
Get
fuck.
The
you're
fuck
not,
off.
You're not
doing any good, my man.
No,
and you're too old for
this.
Get
off the internet. Get off the internet. You're not the dingo.
Right.
You're not
no.
me.
And okay. you don't have the loaf. You don't have the loaf to show for.
You don't.
It's
even,
not relevant.
No, it's not. What?
I'm just saying his loaf is not relevant.
Right. I think that's it for the first ever Shamey, or do you got any more?
Nah, just, you know, DM either me or Michael and let us know if you see anything.
And if you're getting consistent harassing and it's real and it's genuine. And
we will be there. We're the vigilantes of the internet. And we actually may, this may or may not be true, but we might be showing up at the assemblies to, like, how police officers show up and they go, hey, this is what happens.
We're going to be talking to kids about this.
We're going to show the gassing of the Jews. And we're going to say, this is what happens. You wind up on the shame game and it's a shame talk at the assemblies. And I think we're going to be doing a worldwide, across the country, actually.
That'd be a fucking dope
tour. We're going to do a road trip, a tour where we hit all high schools. And I also want to just shout out Jason Selgo of Ottawa Glandorf High, the principal, for making an assembly about this, because I don't think enough schools are doing it. Because
I don't want these kids getting in trouble. Listen, I'm not going to get into shit that I know about.
Right.
But I know that kids get in trouble for this stuff. I have young kids.
I heard he's doing community service now.
Yo, it's real. And your community service would be the least.
You're lucky
to get away with community service.
So anyway, that's all we got.
First ever After the Shame Game. Dean Collins, great episode.
Thank you.
Great premiere episode. And listen, what time is it?
Shame time.
What time is it?
It's shame time.
Any fuckwits in the house?
Oh.
Any fuckwits in the house?
Oh.
Shame time, shame time, shame time,
shame time.